Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Hit Chat Chit Chat. I'm your co-host, Connor Reynolds, and besides me, we have JP Fashone. JP, how you doing, bub?
Good, good, good. Excited. We got a good topic today. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I'm pumped. I'm pumped. Now, really quick, before we get into that topic, I want to chat with you guys listening real quick. I want to give an apology on missing last week. Took a little break. Mr. JP had a little vacation down in the south of Texas with a little family. Myself, I was kind of nose deep in some blogs, so took last week off. Moving forward, though, we're pretty much going to be rocking and rolling every Thursday, and we're also going to be having a lot of interviews coming in for you guys, and those will be on Tuesday. Now, outside of the Hit Chat Chit Chat feed, I am a part of another podcast that just started. We released our first episode this past Tuesday on the 13th. That was with Cole Thomas. He's the lead pitching guy here at Fast Performance. Him and myself are going to be doing something, so that's going to be released on Tuesdays. If you guys want to go over, check that out. We're also going to be doing our normal Thursdays here, and like I said, with interviews on Tuesday as well.
I had an opportunity yesterday to talk to an Angel scout, a Red Sox scout, a Dodger scout, a Blue Jay scout, a Yankee scout. You get the picture. And I asked every single one of them. I said, hey, when you look at a hitter, what are you looking for? What notes are you taking? The number one thing they said, does the kid barrel the ball up? How often does he hit a sweet spot? Number two, what does his rhythm and his timing look like in the batter's box? Is he falling into his front leg looking full? Or does he have this type of approach that's slow and controlled? Number three, what is his presence in the box? Does he have that swagger that looks like he's about to hit the ball? What's his presence after he fails? Not a single one of them talked about any metrics from hitting a knob on the end of your bat. Not a single one of them talked about exit velo. In fact, two of them said they hate exit velo because you operate best at about 85%. And not a single one of them talked about mechanics. What are you focusing on in practice?
Getting into our main topic, you guys just watched that video that we played. First initial thoughts, what do you have for me, JP?
Yeah, first initial thoughts, I mean, I think the thing that needs to be prefaced is like the context of what we're talking about and like what the discussion wraps around. We're talking about scouting at the professional level, like affiliate professional scouting. We're not talking about recruiting and to get to a college. We're not talking about cracking a lineup. We're not talking about anything about that. We're talking about scouting departments in professional organizations. And so I think that context is critical when we start discussing how this affects our training and kind of our opinions of it.
Massively. Like, if I have pretty much any high school kid coming through watch that video, they're going to take it completely different than what that video is intended for, in my opinion. When you got guys walking through the building that are 140 pounds soaking wet as, you know, juniors, yeah, we're going to be talking about exit velo. We're going to be talking about, she mentioned using metrics where you put a little thing on the knob as if that's something that
brand new.
Yeah.
He knows anything about it. It's whatever.
It's like, that's kind of a big deal there, lady. Like, the audience that she was talking to is the audience of, I guarantee you, the scouts that she talked to are probably like head of departments or very high ups. Like, they're not your local associate scouts that are going to high school games and, you know, your low college games. Because when they go to those, they're going to need to know those numbers. Like, to be able to compare guys from the West Coast to the East Coast, Puerto Rico down to, you know, Canada, you're going to have these numbers at a basic level. Now, once you get filtered through and you're only looking at, you know, the top percentage of the top percentage of players, yeah, we can throw metrics out the window because all of them are going to be high metric guys. We need to look at, like she said, how do they handle failure? Like, those are the big things when you're looking at it, when you already have all of the things like set up for you. When you have high exit velo, you're going to have high bat speed. So if you have those two, you're going to look at the other stuff, right? Now, when you're talking to high school guys, we need to look at that stuff. We have to look at that stuff. And to have those comments and make it seem as if that's just, you know, for everybody, to me, I was getting a lot of like Alex Rodriguez, Albert Pujols, Jim Thomae talking about how they hit versus how they actually hit. And to me, that's where it's like, I feel like she missed the head massively on that.
Yeah. And yeah, once again, I mean, we're talking about scouting. We're talking about, you know, dudes going out and watching players. Like you said, like there's, you filter out a lot of athletes at this point. Like if you are on a MLB team scouting board, you are physically gifted and like are physically capable of playing at that level. It's kind of the cutoff. So there is definitely some selection bias, I think, in that opinion. But you know, let's just go through the three things she mentioned there, and the scouts mentioned apparently is that so like first of all, like how often do they barrel the baseball?
Right? Massive.
Hugely important. And I think looking at it from a scout's perspective, if I worked in a scouting department, that would be something that I would see as highly valuable, because if you can't put the barrel on the baseball super consistently at a lower level than affiliate ball, then you're probably going to struggle when the pitching gets better. It's not, your bat to ball skills are not going to improve when the pitching gets better. So that's just, to me, I understand the points that they mentioned, because they are important. But like you said, I think to the general public, that isn't maybe necessarily ingrained in how professional baseball operates, it comes off a little misleading.
The part that I laughed about is where she said that a lot of scouts don't care about exit velocity because they feel like you operate better at an 85% scale. I don't think anyone out there is like saying that's wrong. Like that's not a wrong. Like, I don't want my guys swinging at 100% all the time. Like, that doesn't make sense. But when you train to raise their 100%, that then also raises the 85%. So, like, to say that those two things don't matter, it's, to me, that's where it's just like, again, you're just missing the mark of what you're trying to get out. Like, I don't know if this was a purposely put out so that way it would get this kind of attention and these kind of clicks and start this kind of conversation. I have no idea. I hope so, because yeah. Especially I was showing the video off to some of the other instructors. Cole Thomas pointed out Velo U is putting this out. They're the ones that made this video. And to say like that metrics don't matter coming from a place that is based off of metrics, to me, that's where it's like, this has to be a gag video. Like, this can't be real.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it is a good conversation for the baseball world to have. I think we're still going back and forth on, like, where's the line, right? I think we could both agree that, metrics have their place and getting bogged down in the data is real, is very real. And so there's definitely a place in time for them, and guys definitely go too far. But I think having that conversation of like, where is that line? And it's going to be different for different individuals. It's going to be different for different organizations. It's going to be different for the player development department than it is for the scouting department. But I think to just blatant, just flat out say that, like, hey, it doesn't matter at all is kind of comical. That's just, come on.
Yeah, and, like, to throw out that two scouts said that they hate exit velo, to me, I'm hearing the same people saying that they hate launch angle. It's like, it's a part of every swing. It's a part, like, okay, I'll take that back. It's not a part of every swing. It's a part of every batted ball. Like, Every single one's going to have that. Yeah. And to say that you don't like that, it's like you don't like people making contact then, or you don't like when, I don't know. To me, it like I said, I hope it's just a video that they put out to get clicks going and stuff like that. Because to me, that is a video that needs so much more context for it being a 58-second video. And not to explain, like, what you have brought in there, JP. It's like, again, I'm getting A-Rod feels. I'm getting where they're saying one thing, demonstrating another, and just being like, you're supposed to listen to me because I threw on the screen and said I talked to Major League Scouts. Like, all right, okay, whatever.
It's the trap of social media is the lack of context. It's why I'm such a terrible tweeter, because I try and jam all the context I can into every single tweet, and it ends up just being this massive, like, convoluted, like, essay where you lose track of what the point is in the first place. But I think, you know, like I said, like, the things, I don't think there's anything in there that people disagree with. Like, is the load important? Is timing important? Yeah. Is confidence and presence in the box important? Yeah. Is barreling the ball consistently important? For sure. But I think it also sheds light on the fact that as far as Major League Baseball has come in their willingness to accept and use data, I think that the departments and the teams that still struggle so much is the scouting department, for a multitude of reasons. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that there's not as much turnover in the scouting department as there is on the player development side. I think it has to do with the fact that scouting is just so much more subjective, because you just don't know how kids are going to turn out when they're, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road playing minor league baseball. You just don't know. So it's a little bit more of a little bit more subjective. But I also think that a lot of organizations, scouting and player development department, are terrible at communicating with each other. I think that the scouts like to see one thing in an athlete, and the player development department likes to see a completely different thing. And a lot of organizations get into trouble when that happens. I mean, you could have a scout that says that, you know, a scouting director is like, I hate exit velocity. I just want to see a dude just, you know, he's got a good face, you know, ball really pops off his bat, like all the euphemisms that you heard in Moneyball. And then the player development department's, you know, talking about how they need to raise their exit velocity. And so you kind of go through this cycle. But I think overall, like, it's really good advice for a sophomore, junior, senior at a major D1 university that's, you know, top 10% in the country. I think that's really good advice for those guys. I think it's horrible advice for a freshman in high school that's trying to make the varsity team. Like, it's not how that works.
And as I would say, it's not because of why it's important for the D1 guy and not important for the high school guy. It's not that being balanced or bearing the ball or having confidence in the box is bad for a high schooler, but it's one of those where it's like, you have to make sure that if your exit velo, and we've talked about this, like, if your exit velo isn't there, if your bat speed isn't there, like, there's this thing that they'll talk about called potential. And you're at a ceiling point for you as a ball player. And it's not anything about who you are as a person or anything like that, but when you are physically capped at a high school JV level with your playing ability, but you barrel the ball and you have confidence and you have, I don't know, swagger. What else is the thing that she said? Like if you have those things, but your ceiling is JV high school baseball, you will be the fun guy on varsity as a senior. And you're going to be a fun dude to have around when you're playing slow pitch softball the next year. Outside of that, like you gotta, if you're not getting after those things and those numbers, like there's a reason that numbers don't lie. And there's a reason that we can look at a kid and I can call a school and say, hey, you may not know who I am. You may not know who this kid is, but these are his numbers. They're going to know what I'm talking about. And we're going to be able to be on the same page and understanding of what this player's capabilities are. Now, if I reverse that, call this random school that they've never heard of me, they've never heard of this player, I'm like, you know, his presence in the box.
Great presence in the box.
Oh, and I'll tell you what, when he fails, can't even tell.
Yeah.
Can't even tell. Like they're going to be like, okay, thanks for the call. How'd you get my number? To have that be a focus is for a selective group. And to, I put up the meme and comment where it was the other guys, and it was Will Ferrell when he's like, did that go the way you thought it was going to go? Nope. It's like, I don't think she thought that I was going to get taken. I don't know. That's just me though.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it sheds light, and we, you know, context. It sheds light on the failure of so many people's understanding of just data and analytics in general. Like, numbers are useless without context. And I think it's a large reason why you see schools and organizations kind of working backwards, where they've invested time, energy, resources into technology, into getting all these resources and getting the data. And then they don't provide any context for it. And so analyzing it leads them down these ridiculous paths. Like if and she says like, hey, like scouts told me they hate exit velocity, right? If you're going to finish that sentence with they hate exit velocity because it only shows their peak, 100%. Which exit velocity are we looking at? We're looking at a peak one time exit velocity. We're looking at average exit velocity. We're looking at exit velocity off a tee. We're looking at exit velocity in game. Because that's these big schools, these big D1 schools, and even some JUCOs and some schools with some money. They have TrackMans in state. They have all the same tech that major league organizations do, and so it's really easy to get the in-game data and get a really good understanding analytically of what this player is doing, why they're doing it, and how they're being successful, and like where is the threshold that we can like find some room to make them better. But man, yeah, I just. The context is king here, and like you said, 50 some second video just isn't going to provide enough to really provide any insight for athletes, for coaches, for parents, for really anybody.
Yeah, it's, for me, it was a tough video to have pop up through the feed. I think it might be one of the only times I've seen my entire timeline on the same page. I don't know if that's because I blocked the right people or what, but like my timeline was pretty united on that not being a great video.
Yeah, and that honestly kind of fired me up. I opened up the comments really expecting like some serious discourse, we'll say, about, you know, the pros and cons of this opinion, but they were pretty unanimous of like, this is eyewash. This is just straight eyewash. And it made me very happy that everybody kind of just decided like, hey, yeah, this doesn't make any sense. Even if we take away, like, let's take away data completely. Let's pretend we're 30 years in the past and we just have no data. Scouting that way, like pre-Moneyball, just doesn't make sense. It just logically doesn't follow. Like, well, we're not tracking in-game stuff. We're not tracking how they're producing.
And it was really easy, I feel like, to be a scout when you had how many MLB teams, how many guys could get drafted. I mean, the draft used to be 60 rounds. Like, right. You could just essentially say, hey, I think Billy Bob can hit the ball hard and give us a chance. You're getting drafted, dude. Like, sick.
Yeah.
And so what would happen is, like, you get one guy that would be a part of, like, 20 dudes getting drafted, right? Two of the 20 make it up to AAA or whatever. That scout's now getting moved up because he was able to, you know, cast a giant net and a couple of dudes worked out. And so how you said earlier, how there's not a lot of turnover when it comes to the scouting departments, you got guys that where there's only 20 rounds now. Like, we had our first full draft post-COVID, and it's sticking at 20 rounds. So, like, we're not having massive amount of minor leaguers coming through where it's like, hey, if this dude doesn't work out, boom, kick him out, we're on to the next guy. Like, you've got to kind of work with and make sure that the guys that you're drafting are worth the shit. And it comes down to, you got to be able, one, to just get the guys that are able to compete at a certain level, you have to get those guys seen by the next scout guy, right? Now, there's that filtration system. The first thing that they're going to be looking at when those two scouts are talking to each other are going to be metrics. They're going to be numbers. They're going to be things that can be black and gray comparing that dude to 20 other dudes that this next level of scouts looking at. Then you filter out those guys.
Or at the very least, like, does he have a good body? You know what I mean? Like, the idea of, like, this kid's got a good body. He's got a good presence in the box. Like, what they're saying is, like, is he huge? Like, is he of the physical stature?
To be able to produce a high exit velo.
Right, exactly. Does he have the physical capability to produce output? And that's the other thing. I've kind of gone back and forth over the last week or two of, like, there is a dichotomy between, especially in baseball, that I think is different than a lot of sports. There's a dichotomy between just pure output, like how fast can you move, how hard can you swing, like how strong are you, and like the finesse or like the kind of art form of everything. Versus in football, like you're looking at a linebacker, like it's just straight output. Like there might be some like mental stuff, like does he know the game, can you read offensive play schemes and like stuff like that, but it's just straight how fast does a dude move, how strong is he, how hard does he hit. Like, it's just output. There's no timing, there's no presence, there's not a lot of that. And it's very true in hitting. Like, you can have a dude that just moves the shit out of that, hits the ball really hard. Like they said, like his load sucks, he's always out on his front leg, like he looks timid, like that dude's not going to produce. And the filtration, I think, even if we're just talking like super old school, it's just like, is he physically capable? Which, like you said, like that's the metric, that's your ceiling.
For me, this was, like you said, it was a great video to get the community kind of in line together, stuff like that. Right in time for us to be heading into the major player development part of the season. So you already know that's probably going to collapse here in a little bit. Driveline's going to come out with another new tool or blog or something that's going to just run rapid through the community. And I'm really excited for it because, I mean, it's nice when we're all, you know, kind of aligned, moving in one direction. But, I mean, I also kind of like, no.
Like, butt heads up.
It's all yeah. Nice.
And I think they'll, you know, it's a slower process than I think some of us may want. But I think baseball is heading in a certain direction. And as much as people want to hold on to the way things have been done, it's just not, it's not a reality anymore. It's the data is here. Like, we're going to have markerless motion capture in every stadium. Like, college teams are going to have it. We're going to be running it. MLB teams are going to have it. And it's just going to be a thing. And so I think the faster we get on board with using the same terminology, at the very least, is going to be huge for us to just even have this kind of discourse. You know, we can't be talking about, like, you know, his power elbow L. Like, we have to be talking about elbow flexion. Like, we have to be talking about very specific things because, like I said, the context to all of this is just so crucial. And if we don't have the same terminology and we're not all on the same page when it comes to just basic understandings, then we're going to get lost really quick.
I was listening to another podcast not related to baseball at all, and they were talking about the skinny jean phase and how what happens is, like, you get a trend of everyone was rocking heavy baggy pants, right? Baggy, baggy, baggy. And then out of nowhere, these skinny jeans came into play. Now, at first, if you're wearing skinny jeans, you were the weirdo. You were like, because they were tight, they were tight, they were tight. 5, 6, 7, 8 years later, there's been a happy medium that has been found. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's nice to have a little form on the buns, but you also don't want stuff getting, you know, cut off on circulation. So, like, it's taken time for people to come around and for companies to put out the right product and get people to buy in. And I feel like that's where Exit Velo is. Like, it's not that they haven't had an idea of Exit Velo, and I think that's what she means when the two scouts say that they hate Exit Velo. Like, I got kids that come in, and every single ball that they hit, they might hit that ball 5 feet straight into the ground. Like, you don't need a hit track to tell you that ball hit the ground 5 feet in front of you. But immediately they swing, and they swing back, and they want to look up at the TV. And, like, I think that's what they mean when they say that they hate exit velocity. They hate the idea of people, like, chasing it and thinking that's the end-all, be-all. And I get it. Like, I understand. But, like, that's where the context part comes in. And we're at some point, we're going to find that happy medium. And I think we're a lot closer to the happy medium than we are at, with the beginning of the phase. And so here shortly, it's going to change. I mean, the same thing happened when analytics and metrics first, like, were majorly introduced. You had major league teams just popping off on, you know, guys from the Ivy Leagues that have never played a game in their life just because they're really good with a spreadsheet. And I feel like we're starting to kind of come back a little bit more to the middle, where you got guys that are able to do both because they were a little bit more too analytical. They weren't able to, you know, communicate, like you said, on the same page as a player because they're talking in one reference and, you know, they're talking in different reference, stuff like that. But for us to not be on the same page when it comes to terminology and stuff like that, it's tough. I was scrolling through Instagram the other day and I saw this one, and amazing transition because it literally exactly what you just talked about. The video was describing about how this dude hates how everyone calls it a load. And he's like, the load, that's not real. That doesn't, it needs to be called like a hand preparation move or something like that. And he's like, for now on out, like, I'm going to call it a hand preparation move, like, blah, 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 like, all this shit. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, all right, like, I get what you're saying. Like, load may not be the exact definition of what you're thinking of, but you're going to have kids coming in, and you're going to be talking about hand preparation. It's going to be the exact same thing. The definitions are the exact same thing. But it's almost like you're trying to force your terminology onto someone that may not understand it. And then at that point, it's like, what matters more? For me to be able to communicate with my athlete where we're on the same page, or for them to use my forced terminology because that's what I think is the right terminology? Like, to me, I feel like we just need to go through, and I tell all my guys this, I don't care if you know the name of the drill. I want you to be able to replicate the drill. Like, I don't care if we call it the same thing. I want it to mean the same thing. And for us not to be on that page right now with everybody, like you said, with the scouting department, to the analytical department, player development, like, they all just need to kind of get on the same page so that way they can talk, you know, apples and apples versus apples and crackers. Like, we need to get on the same page. And it's not just for us as instructors. It's also for these young dudes that are coming up trying to understand all of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's totally different. And that's why I think it's so much harder to be an athlete. Like, in a lot of ways, it's easier. There's the access to information so much easier. The ability to get exposure and get recruited so much easier. But it's a lot harder because you have to kind of teach your brain to think two different ways, right? you have to kind of train your brain to understand information and kind of put things into context with kind of general terminology. You know, like I expect my athletes to understand what I mean when I say they have like too much hip flexion. I expect them to know what hip flexion is, like to the biomechanical term. But when we get in the cage, they have to kind of flip that switch of like, okay, I'm not going to think about, like, I'm not trying to work on my hip flexion. I'm trying to work on my load, right? I'm not trying to work on like my horizontal abduction. Like I'm trying to work on like my hand preparation, right? Like they have to be able to do those two things. And we have to, as trainers, be able to do the two things as well, because when I'm communicating to you, coach to coach, and we're talking or we're discussing about a certain move, or we're discussing something that we see a lot in athletes, I can't use my terminology to tell you what I'm thinking, because we're going to be speaking two different languages. We have to be able to use some common terminology, which is why biomechanics fires me up so much, because it's just like, hey, like everybody is kind of right. I'm sure every single person out there has some nugget of truth. Biomechanics allows us to speak the same language and then investigate that to the point that we can describe it to each other really well. And like we can actually get down to a fundamental understanding of what's happening and not have to talk about like, you know, coiling the rear hip or like I don't know what that could mean 10 different things to 10 different coaches.
At him, dude.
But it's the same thing with like, you know, Jeff Fry and like pulling the knob through or like 108 and like the scissor kick and like or us talking about like a bat speed and like losing posture. Like what does losing posture mean? Like that could mean 10 different things. So like the faster we can get to using similar terminology when speaking to other coaches, I think the easier it's gonna be for us as a collective community to get to a place that we feel really confident when we're talking to hitters, like we know what the best hitters in the world do and like what makes them successful.
I love it. Now, small, quick transition, last little topic, kind of throwing this out to you so I can go first most definitely. Was going through Facebook and just scrolling through, mostly looking for... We have a segment with the podcast with me and Cole, pretty much just asinine Facebook posts from parents. And so I was scrolling through and I found this little one and I thought this would be a great place for us to kind of talk about it. Had a coach that was going through, and I think it was 14U, hasn't coached before but played, so he just doesn't have like some of the equipment and stuff like that. Reached out to Facebook and was just like, hey guys, you know, what are some tools or practice things I could get that could help out with some of my guys, low budget. And so I was just gonna think, hey, this would be a great spot, just throw out, you know, if we had like a, you know, I don't know, $300 budget or something like that, like what would be some good things. First off, for me, couple of nice things. I am a big fan just getting like little cones. You can use them for so many things when it comes to bunting, when it comes to, I like putting them down, and if you're doing a step back drill, have them step over the cone. This is going to force them to really make sure that they get fully planted in the ground rather than just kind of letting that back foot kind of slide over. I think those would be some just really nice off the top things. Maybe a couple ladders to do some agility stuff like that. Go to your local Played Against Sports, get some bats, try and find an average size bat and stuff like that. Go get some lead tape, maybe some pennies, something like that. Tape a little, some pennies on the end or the little lead tape on one of the bats. Do the same thing for the knob on another bat. Do it for both for the third bat. I think that'd probably be under like, you know, $75 if you're able to. I don't know. Grab a Blast Motion, they're like 115. I think that could be a really good drill where if you need a station, you know, you have like them hitting off of the tee, oh, probably need to get a tee, just hitting into the tee, you set Blast Motion up, you can put the camera on so that way you don't need someone there going through changing players' names and stuff like that. You have the recording, or you just have it be on, I don't know, bat speed, and have it say out loud what each bat speed is and try and make it a competition. So that way you don't have to be there, but you're still getting guys some competition stuff. But you got something off the top of the dome there, Mr. JP?
Yeah, I'm going to go two different directions. First, I'm going to go like typical, like, okay, equipment wise. Like you said, I got a little vacation time. I went down to Houston and saw my cousin and her kids, and went to some youth baseball games, which I have not been to in quite a while. So this is 9-year-old baseball, so pretty young. But just kind of walking around the complex and kind of watching teams warm up and stuff. A lot of teams have something that they hit. It's either like a sock net that they do flips into, or they hit like weighted balls. Like, a lot of teams have these massive, I'm sure you've seen both, a massive, essentially hitting plyos, but they're just massive. They probably weigh 1,000 to 2,000 grams, and they don't go very far. So my thing, I was sitting there watching them hit these things. A lot of the kids, you know, I get the idea of like the heavy and like bracing into impact and things like that. But my thing with the big plyos is like you don't get a lot of batted ball feedback, right? You don't get a lot of ball feedback. So, of course, being the driveline guy, the first thing I'm going to tell you to get is get a set of mini hitting plyos. The little guys, they're easy to hit. You don't have to coach the kids. Like, the ball flight does all the feedback. If they hit it really far, they probably hit it pretty good. If they didn't hit very far, they probably didn't hit very good. You don't need to tell them that. Like, they know. They want to hit the ball far. Like, it's cool. And it's easy to warm up. You don't need a little ton of room before games and stuff like that. And they rarely break. Like, you know, easy investment. The second direction I'm going to go, the kind of alternate, is take the money, pay yourself to just take time and just research. Just pay yourself to educate, you know, just get some education. It doesn't have to be like, hey, go buy certs. Hey, like, you know, pay for things like that. Just pay yourself to sit down a couple hours and just research. Research the best training practices, research skill acquisition, research what baseball looks like to get to wherever your 14-year-old team needs to go.
Skills at scale.
Like, you know, like, so instead of buying equipment, because I really don't think you need a ton of equipment. I really think what a lot of youth coaches need more than anything is just time to educate themselves, because the information's out there. I think a lot of coaches just don't take the time to find it.
I like that. I like that a lot. That's a great little note to end on. I appreciate it. For everyone listening, appreciate you guys taking the time to tune in. Like I said, moving forward, we're going to be on Thursdays. Me and JP will have interviews released on Tuesday here on this channel. And then we have another podcast with Fast Baseball Player Development. Myself and Cole Thomas are doing that. That's on Tuesdays. JP, what can the people expect from you?
I'm going to be tweeting more. We're gonna buckle down and tweet quite a bit more. We're getting a new, a little bit different setup at Driveline with some cameras, kind of like similar to your setup, a little lesson, a little video, a little mic'd up. So I'm going to be putting a lot more content out. So make sure you follow me. Just cracked 1,000 followers. So, you know, we're kind of big time now.
No big deal. So
definitely follow me on Twitter, because there's going to be a lot more content coming out on my end. And I'm going to try and limit the context that I put in there, so it's a little bit shorter.
I did see John going through and taking the video on you. And I think the first two sentences he said was keep it low timing.
Keep it short. Yeah. Keep it short and entertaining. That's always good advice for me.
Hey, you know, though, like, it's hard when you have all this information, because I get told that it's tough to, like, when you're looking at stuff that you've sat down, taken the time, invested in, like, you think's interesting. And you're like looking at like a paragraph of information, and you're being told like, hey, you need to take out like half of that. And you're like, wait,
like, but half of the time, like the whole thing, somebody's going to read half that paragraph, and they're going to lose the context, and they're going to be like, wow, that's not right. I'm like, well, in the other half of the paragraph, it would answer your question.
If only you added another minute to the video to supply video.
Yeah. Exactly. Make it a 2-minute video instead of a 58-second video.
Probably be smarter. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in. Appreciate it. You guys have a great rest of your night, and we will see you guys next week.
Later.
You want to do another clap? Hello, everybody, and hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Hit Chat Chit Chat. I'm your host, Connor Reynolds. With beside me, my other host. I'm gonna do that over again. All right, fucking clap it one more time.